Welcome to the Talking People podcast. Today I'm going to read one of Leonora Carrington's short stories, The Debutante. Please listen as if it were a dream. Don't get in the rational mood to listen, because surrealist literature needs the kind of approach we have with poems. We just let go, let words take us wherever. Try to visualize the story. Carrington was actually a painter. Before reading the story, let me tell you a few things about her life and art. Leonora Carrington was born in England, in the UK, in 1917. Her parents were English textile tycoons and very strict Catholics. Leonora Carrington would lead a very different life and personal development. She became a surrealist artist and a Mexican citizen. When she was 18, and just before leaving England for good, she had to be a debutante. She had to go to Buckingham Palace for her presentation to society. It's true. She didn't like it one bit. She didn't enjoy it at all, I mean. So she wrote this short story I'm about to read. Apart from helping us learn about the world and develop our passions, art helps us to digest those things which hurt us. Carrington met the surrealist artist Max Ernst at that time. He was in London exhibiting his paintings, and she was there studying art. They fell in love and eloped. To elope is to run away with a lover. He portrayed her in Bride of the Wind, in case you want to have a look at that picture. They lived together in Paris with other artists and talked lots about art and life, and Hitler's threat on freedom. With the outbreak of the Second World War, Max Ernst was put in a concentration camp. Leonora Carrington tried to get his freedom, but she had to escape south herself. Just imagine. In that time she had several mental breakdowns. She was put in an institution, which is to say a mental hospital, and given those hard drugs women patients got at that time, when doctors diagnosed them with hysteria. After one breakdown in a hospital in Santander, a town in the north of Spain, read her story down below, because it tells you everything about it, in a surrealist way though. Carrington escaped, rushed to the Mexican embassy, and married a friend of hers who was a diplomat there. They moved to Mexico and eventually separated. Later she married a Hungarian photographer. One of her best friends was the surrealist painter Remedios Varo. Their paintings are sometimes mixed up in books. Varo and Carrington got a kick out of the occult. This is not what I love from Leonora Carrington, though. I love her freedom as an artist. I can feel it in every word she writes. I love her use of animals in the stories. The hyena, for instance, an animal that appears in The Debutante, stands for her sexual self. The horse, another of her favorites, represents her spiritual self. I love her approach to life and art. She says that she paints or writes because she enjoys it. Doing it well or badly is irrelevant, really. And I agree. Something else she says is this: if young people tell me I'm young at heart, I take offense. I'm old at heart. I know what she means, I think. Growing older is good for people who love freedom, because you need many years to learn to be free. Leonora Carrington has written tons of articles, novels, essays, and poems in Spanish, in English, and in French. She has also produced thousands of paintings, sculptures, collage, and a number of tapestries. Here's the link to a self-portrait she's got in the Met, New York City, the USA. As you can see in it, she paints a hyena and two horses. And now for the story. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. The Debutante by Leonora Carrington from her book of stories, The House of Fear, 1989. When I was a debutante, I often went to the zoo. I went so often that I knew the animals better than the girls of my own age. Indeed, it was in order to get away from people that I found myself at the zoo every day. The animal I got to know best was a young hyena. She knew me too. She was very intelligent. I taught her French, and she, in return, taught me her language. In this way we passed many pleasant hours. My mother was arranging a ball in my honor on the 1st of May. During this time I was in a state of great distress for whole nights. I've always detested balls, especially if they are given in my honor. On the morning of the 1st of May 1934, very early, I went to visit the hyena. "What a bloody nuisance," I told her. "I've got to go to my ball tonight." "You're very lucky," she said. "I'd love to go. I don't know how to dance, but at least I could make small talk." "There'll be a great many different things to eat," I said. "I've seen truckloads of food delivered to our house." "And you're complaining," replied the hyena, disgusted. "Just think of me. I eat once a day, and you can't imagine what a heap of bloody rubbish I'm given." I had an audacious idea, and I almost laughed. "All you have to do is to go instead of me." "We don't resemble each other enough, otherwise I'd gladly go," said the hyena rather sadly. "Listen," I said, "no one sees too well in the evening light. If you disguise yourself, nobody will notice you in the crowd. Besides, we're practically the same size. You're my only friend. I beg you to do this for me." She thought this over, and I knew she really wanted to accept. "Done," she said, all of a sudden. There weren't many keepers about. It was so early in the morning. I opened the cage quickly, and in a few moments we were out in the street. I hailed a taxi. At home, everybody was still in bed. In my room, I brought out the dress I was to wear that evening. It was a little long, and the hyena found it difficult to walk in my high-heeled shoes. I found some gloves to hide her hands, which were too hairy to look like mine. By the time the sun was shining into my room, she was able to make her way around the room several times, walking more or less upright. We were so busy that my mother almost opened the door to say good morning before the hyena had hidden under my bed. "There's a bad smell in your room," my mother said, opening the window. "You must have a scented bath before tonight, with my new bath salts." "Certainly," I said. She didn't stay long. I think the smell was too much for her. "Don't be late for breakfast," she said, and left the room. The greatest difficulty was to find a way of disguising the hyena's face. We spent hours and hours looking for a way, but she always rejected my suggestions. At last she said, "I think I've found the answer. Have you got a maid?" "Yes," I said, puzzled. "There you are, then. Ring for your maid, and when she comes in, we'll pounce upon her and tear off her face. I'll wear her face tonight instead of mine." "It's not practical," I said. "She'll probably die if she hasn't got a face. Someone will certainly find the corpse and will be put in prison." "I'm hungry enough to eat her," the hyena replied.
"And the bones?"
"As well," she said. "So it's on?" "Only if you promise to kill her before tearing off her face. It'll hurt too much otherwise." "All right, it's all the same to me." Not without a certain amount of nervousness, I rang for Mary, my maid. I certainly wouldn't have done it if I didn't hate having to go to a ball so much. When Mary came in, I turned to the wall so as not to see. I must admit it didn't take long. A brief cry, and it was over.
While the hyena was eating, I looked out the window. A few minutes later, she said, "I can't eat any more. Her 2 feet are left over still, but if you have a little bag, I'll eat them later in the day." "You'll find a bag embroidered with fleurs de lis in the cupboard. Empty out the handkerchiefs you'll find inside and take it." She did as I suggested. Then she said, "Turn round now and look how beautiful I am." In front of the mirror, the hyena was admiring herself in Mary's face. She had nibbled very neatly all around the face, so that what was left was exactly what was needed. "You've certainly done that very well," I said. Towards evening, when the hyena was all dressed up, she declared, "I really feel in tip-top form. I have a feeling I shall be a great success this evening." When we had heard the music from downstairs for quite some time, I said to her, "Go on down now, and remember, don't stand next to my mother. She's bound to realize that it isn't me. Apart from her, I don't know anybody. Best of luck." I kissed her as I left her, but she did smell very strong. Night fell. Tired by the day's emotions, I took a book and sat down by the open window, giving myself up to peace and quiet. I remember I was reading Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift. About an hour later, I noticed the first signs of trouble. A bat flew in at the window, uttering little cries. I am terribly afraid of bats. I hid behind a chair, my teeth chattering. I had hardly gone down on my knees when the sound of beating wings was overcome by a great noise at my door. My mother entered, pale with rage. "We just sat down at table," she said, "when that thing sitting in your place got up and shouted. So I smell a bit strong, what? Well, I don't eat cakes." Whereupon it tore off its face and ate it, and with one great bound disappeared through the window.